south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
All right, since I mentioned a couple of shows ago, a defense umbrella. Yep, remember that? A defense umbrella. It's over $200 for that thing, and I have one. And you might say it's only obsessive or eccentric people would buy one of those things. But as I explained many times before, I'm an engineer, and us engineers just love gadgets. Hey, most women love shoes and jewelry. Some people have way too many tattoos. Many guys love sports paraphernalia and have way too much of it, at least according to their significant others. That's why very few ladies permit that stuff around the house. They designate it to the man cave, right? Now, in no way am I saying you should go out and spend over $200 on an umbrella. As for me, I just thought this thing was way too cool. The thing is, this thing's built so strong and so well that you can open it up fully, lay it across two chairs like a bridge, and walk across it. In fact, the website has a video of a guy doing that. Hey, that's what sold me. Now, before I say anything else about it, here's what you absolutely have to know if you're living here in Latin America. You're going to need umbrellas. Lots and lots of umbrellas. Now, you might think it's a small and superfluous thing to talk about here on this show or talk about at all. But really, the way it absolutely pours during the rainy season in that 6 months of the year, it's hard to describe unless you're stuck in it yourself. If you don't have a strong, decent umbrella in your house or car, you will suffer and get soaked to the bone many more times than you could ever imagine. In fact, I'd say in my 30-plus years down here, I've gone through at least 20 different bad or insufficient umbrellas, maybe 30. The problem is there are so many badly designed, crappy umbrellas out there, especially the collapsible ones, that some aren't fit to be doorstops. And those are the ones you really want to have on hand, the collapsible mini kind, sometimes called a telescoping umbrella. Because the big full-size ones, the ones that are like walking sticks, are a nuisance. And if you do a lot of walking, you like walking around like I do and so many expats do, the big full-size ones are just a pain in the ass. They're bulky. You always have to find some place to store them or shove them if you go into a cafe or restaurant. Let's just say they limit your mobility. That's why those little collapsible ones are so convenient, but 90% of them are pure junk. You use them two or three times, and they break or bend, or a wind comes up, and they flip inside out. I absolutely hate that. And then, after they're inside out, you get them right again. That's if you're lucky. The mechanics have been weakened, and the thing will tend to flip inside out with even lighter gusts of wind. I can't tell you how many of those things I've broken or just thrown away. In fact, I remember once I was in the Costco parking lot and a big wind came up. One of those things flipped inside out. I got a soaker and I got so pissed off in that moment, I just threw it under the tire of my car and ran it over. I remember getting some satisfaction out of that. The thing about those collapsing umbrellas is that they're so convenient. They're only about a foot long. You can put them anywhere. You can even shove it in your waistband without too much bother. They're just no trouble at all to carry and can be, if you hold them right, kind of a defensive weapon. That's why over the years I've taken to carrying one with me every time I walk anywhere. It just makes you feel good to have something in your hand just in case. Not that I've ever come even near to thinking I'd have to use it as a weapon. But who knows, right? Besides that, I think if a bad guy happened to be walking towards you with evil intent, when he sees you have something like a stick or a club in your hand, even though it's an umbrella, I think he'd move on to an easier mark. Maybe. At least in my case, I've never come even near a confrontation whilst carrying my umbrella. Did I say whilst? Old school English. That'll work, right? Let me point out once again, though, that most collapsible umbrellas are junk. 90% of them are so lightweight and fragile. If you ever tried to whack someone upside the head, he'd probably just laugh at you. Even so, you really need to have a good collapsible umbrella or two. Oh, another cool thing about those collapsible umbrellas is that you could take them on air flights, put them in your luggage, or even in your carry-on bag, but you cannot do that with a full-size umbrella. They'll confiscate it. How do I know that? Well, it's happened to me. Now, the best quick and dirty way to tell if one of those collapsible umbrellas is halfway decent is just to feel the weight of it, the mass. I learned that after going through about 10 or 15 crappy ones. Now, bear with me a second. I've made a study of this. So anyway, about 4 years ago, I went on Amazon and ordered one each of all, I think it was 8 or 10 collapsible umbrellas they had on the site. That is, I ordered 8 or 10 of the heaviest by weight, because they've got something like 50, probably 100 collapsible umbrellas on Amazon at any given time. And as it turns out, just one of those collapsible umbrellas from that heavyweight group. Man, it took the Johnny Mueller Expat Gold Medal Award. There were a couple of second and third place runner-ups, but they weren't all that close. Decent, but not really in the running. And you heard me in a previous show mention the name of that thing. It's called a Kung Fu Smith umbrella. Kung Fu Smith. Only about 20 or 25 bucks. Man, that thing is heavy and it's built like a tank. Yet, it's just as small and maneuverable as the crappy one. And in reality, I don't know how they can get away with charging so little for the thing. Oh, and the other crap ones offer fashionable colors, designs, and prints. And Kung Fu Smith does have black and assorted other colors. But I prefer my umbrellas black, and for a reason. It's more stealthy and does not shout out, "Hey, I'm a wealthy gringo. I have an umbrella that matches my fuchsia Nikes." What do you think? Though some might say, and girls tell me this all the time, that if you have a colored umbrella, you're less likely to lose it or leave it behind. And that's my problem. I even left my favorite Kung Fu Smith behind. Now, someone's certainly enjoying and admiring it, and it's not me. And that was really the quandary I had when I bought that $200-plus defense umbrella. I thought, yeah, that'll be just my luck. I'll leave it somewhere, and someone will have himself a real prize. And they won't even know it. Because, you see, the trick is with that umbrella is to get it into whack-a-bad-guy-upside-the-head mode. So it's like this. When you're ready to pop someone upside the head, you do that, of course, when it's closed and collapsed. You grab the top of it, give a quick twist of the wrist, and the metal shaft extends, and now you have a very effective club. Somewhat like having a baseball bat or billy club. And for those of you who've been sending me emails asking about that thing, now that I've had it for a month or so, nope, I haven't had to whack someone upside the head, not yet. Probably never will, but I have shown some friends and acquaintances how it works. And here's my analysis. I say before you drop 200 plus bucks on that defense umbrella, buy yourself a Kung Fu Smith for 20 or 25 bucks. Try that one first, and if you like it, forget about the expensive one. I'd say because of the weight and strength of that thing, you're within 70 to 80% of having a real $200 plus dollar defense umbrella. In other words, if that expensive defense umbrella didn't exist at all, having a Kung Fu Smith model would satisfy almost anyone. Now, I fully realize this is sort of a weird conversation. I'm thinking that if someone said to you, "What was Johnny talking about on his show this week?" and you said, "Oh, umbrellas," they'd probably say, "Oh, really? He's losing it. He must be touched in the head. Who gives a about umbrellas? What a boring, stupid, superfluous subject." Well, it might seem so on the surface. But just remember, I'm doing you kind of a service here. If you live down here in Latin America long enough and go through the rainy seasons like we all do, you'll go through shit umbrella after shit umbrella. All of us long-term expats have done so, and it's been a lot of money in the crapper. By the way, if you happen to be at a bar, restaurant, cafe, or bathroom and happen to find a Kung Fu Smith umbrella, it's mine. Give it back to me. Remember, I've got that stealth umbrella, and I'll whack you upside the head. By the way, I think the real difference between a Kung Fu Smith and a stealth umbrella is that you could actually kill someone with the stealth umbrella. And with the Kung Fu Smith, you'd probably just knock them out or knock them down. Oh, and once again, a disclaimer here. I'm not recommending you kill anyone or even whack someone upside the head unless they deserve it. Speaking of someone who deserves it, have you been following that news story lately where a Latino MMA champion fighter chased down a guy in a truck who'd molested, I think it was his kid, over 100 times at a daycare center? I think it was in Los Angeles. And now this guy, this champion MMA fighter, is in jail facing 20 criminal charges and over 20 years in jail. Even though when he shot at the guy, he missed him. He couldn't get any precise shots off because he was in a moving vehicle chasing the guy. Did you see that story? Even Joe Rogan had a comment. He said, if it was him, he wouldn't have shot the guy. He would have strangled him with his bare hands. Well, that's another reason I'm so glad I live in Latin America, because, you know, if that happened down here, you wouldn't have to shoot the pedophile. The neighbors would drag him into the town square and they'd beat him to a pulp or stone him to death. And the local cops would stand by and let him do it. You longtime listeners have heard me tell stories on that very same theme. In fact, every month or so, you read in the paper, and even on TV, sometimes you hear townspeople, especially small towns out in the boonies, where criminals are caught, dragged into the town square, and stoned or beat or worse. And oftentimes, if it's a kid or an adolescent, they let the parents take first crack at them. The thing is, though, they only do that to repeat offenders. They don't do it to you the first or second time. So it's not nearly as medieval or lawless as you might think. It usually takes three times before some real delinquent bad boy, and it's almost always guys, you know, gets the town people so irate they haul them into the town square. Because they know the legal process will just take forever. Of course, we know the legal process in the States is completely broken, too. It's a joke. The question is, what would you do if you found your kid in daycare was being molested over and over again, even just once? Would you stay calm and count on the slow and moldy, corrupt wheels of justice? Or load up the shotgun or get out the defense umbrella? Hey, I don't want to give you any ideas here, but I bet you could sneak that defense umbrella into the courtroom. Sounds like a decent movie plot, huh? Oh, and once again, let me repeat, I don't earn a cent when I mention items I like or have, like that defense or kung fu umbrella. I've got no links or clicks on my website for me to get a piece of the action if you were to buy one. Just saying. The thing is, when it rains up north by you up in Cleveland, you don't need any special umbrella. Any old umbrella will do. When it rains down here in Latin America, you need something a little bit more than a regular umbrella. Take it from me, a guy who's gone through dozens of wickedly bad umbrellas. And the good ones, the long-lasting ones, are far and few in between. All right, enough said about that. Way too much said about that. By the way, how are you guys doing up north with all this inflation? You waiting for that $10 a gallon gas? In Europe, you know, I just checked, and the average price? $10.50 a gallon. And why most Europeans either don't have a car or they don't drive much. They use lots of public transportation. Now, as far as the gas prices here in Latin America, they're hovering around $5 a gallon right now. Pretty close to what you're paying. The thing is, though, here in Latin America, gasoline is one of those things that's always been slightly more expensive down here than up in the States. Almost always from 50 cents to a buck more a gallon. Oh, and down here, diesel's always been cheaper than regular gas, as opposed to just the opposite up in the States. Diesel's usually around 50 cents a gallon less than gas. But as far as gas prices now, they've equalized. They're pretty much the same in the States and here in Latin America. In all the time I've been down here, that's the first time U.S. gas prices have been the same as Latin American prices. Which begs the question, are you ready for those $10 a gallon gas prices? Because, like I said, Europe's been doing it for years. You know, it's good to check the spot price of regular gasoline once in a while, just to see how much your government's really ripping you off. How much they're gouging you, sticking it to you. You know, the spot price today is $3.17 a gallon. So what's that mean? Well, that's what you and I could buy it for if you took a boat out to international waters, met up with a tanker and said, hey, give me 100 gallons of regular gas. They'd sell it to you for $3.17 a gallon. But as soon as you get into port, no matter what country you're in, you're subject to their gas tax laws. You know, as bad and as evil as the gas tax is in the United States, at $2 for every gallon, just imagine if you were living in Europe. They tax every gallon of gas $7. That's absolutely criminal, and reason 2,426 why I'd never want to live in Europe. Have you thought about the gas tax situation lately? You should. It sure irritates the hell out of me and why my next car will be electric. Well, if you're not pissed off at your thoroughly corrupt government by now, you can chew on that a while. By the way, there's no daylight savings time in Latin America because there's really not that much daylight to save. You know, the closer you are to the equator, the more consistent and less variable the sunset and sunrise times. Since in most of the tropics, the sun rises between 5:30 and 6:30 and sets between 5:30 and 6:30 p.m. as well, daylight savings time would be pretty much useless. Though because you have it up north, it is quite confusing to Latinos. They don't understand what it's all about and why those crazy-ass gringos do it. Though they're not the only ones who have trouble with it. Gringos and expats down here in Latin America often find they can be slightly off depending on the time of year when communicating with friends and relatives up in the States. It happens to me all the time. I do a lot of phone consults and I always have to check the caller's time zone, look it up on the internet. There have been times when I've missed my call by an hour, plus or minus, but we always work it out. All because of that daylight saving switchover. Missing something simple like that can make you look like a dummy. Oh well, guilty as charged. All right, now I think it's important to talk about a rather morbid subject. Wills and gringos who are dead and dying. I hope you're not on that short list. I get emails from usually older gringos about this all the time. Here's one from Clyde. He says, "Hi, Johnny. I don't recall you ever talking about wills on your show, but my memory has its limitations and it's seen better days. Anyway, we have a will in the U.S., which I know will not apply to assets in Guatemala and other Latin American countries, and I'd like to hear what other astute gringos might do with their Latin assets regarding their last will and testament." He says, "I'm far from being astute on that subject." Then he says, "During a passing conversation, my Latino lawyer and a separate lawyer I used for some notary work recommended that I open an S.A. corporation, a Sociedad Anonima corporation account. But I'm a little confused as to how that will work, specifically when it comes to the next of kin in the U.S. cashing in on our Latin American assets and land and home that we're building and our bank account. I've heard you discuss S.A.s, Sociedad Anonimas, in the past, but I believe it was related to opening a business." He says, "In your experience, Johnny, what does a gringo with residency like me and the wife, what can we expect to pay for an S.A. corporation? Kind regards, signed, Clyde." Well, Clyde, first I have to say that the doctor should have definitely slapped your parents for naming you Clyde, because I'm sure growing up with a handle like that was not so easy. That said, let's take these issues one at a time. The cost of an S.A. corporation depends on the Latin country, but it's usually under $1,000, but you have to pay the local tax accountant quarterly or monthly to keep the S.A. corporation current with the government, even if there's no movement in the company. Let's say the corporation only owns a house or a car or a boat. That could be $25, $50, or even $100 a month. So to keep it active, you might rack up a few hundred bucks every quarter. All right, let's move on to death, dying, and wills. Here are some tips from expats who've been through it with their own loved ones. Don't assume, number one, that the embassy will help you. The U.S. embassy is unlike what you might think. The U.S. Embassy is only there for their own benefit, not yours. They'll help you notify your family for sure if you're traveling through the country and something bad happens. But if one has residency like you, Clyde, in a Latin American country and you happen to die there, your family won't get a proactive call from the embassy, but they will quickly, in an instant, notify the Social Security Division, and then your payments will be cut off. That's about the only thing the U.S. Embassy is efficient at, cutting off your benefits. And if you think they're going to ship your body back to your hometown in the U.S., well, that's only in the movies. Or if you're active military, or embassy contractor, or a dark, dirty military operator. You know, a Blackwater guy into nation building? Then you get priority. Now, if you got some real property left up in the States, you'll need a U.S. will. And real property here in Latin America, you'll need a will drawn up by a Latino lawyer. And of course, you'll need an executor. That is, I mean, executor. You won't need an executor when your will comes into effect because you'll already be dead. Next, you'll have to determine if you wish to be buried or cremated in Latin America or have your body or ashes shipped back to the States. You'll also have to point out in that will who will be responsible to inform your family back home about your death. That might not be the executor of your will. Next, you have to make sure you understand the rules for funerals in the Latin country you're in. For example, in Guatemala, you must take care of the deceased body within 24 hours. You may delay this, but it's fairly common to have burial cremation the day after you pass away. Now, if you've ever come across a funeral in Latin America and you'll find they're pretty big events, you'll think, wow, that's a whole lot of drama. You'll know why now, because unlike in the U.S. where traditionally families wait 3 to 5 days for burial, it's a fresh situation in the third world. Why? Because it's a tradition in countries that had little or no dependable refrigeration or power. And in the tropics, things spoil in a hurry. But let's not dwell on that. Ew. And just like in the States, most funeral homes let you plan your memorial, burial, cremation, whatever, well before you need the services. You can prepay this stuff at a fantastic discount because, you know, once someone's died, that's when the leeches, parasites, and gougers start swarming. That's why I always say, though almost no one has this on their mind and almost no one ever does this, you should try to prepay those services, get one of those cheap, all-inclusive package deals well before you get old and creaky. I know, no one likes to think about that. But every funeral parlor offers packages like that. When you walk in the door, they've got plenty of pamphlets and handouts with different price schemes. I've even been in some big Latin American malls where they've got little booths set up with funeral home guys trying to sell you a package. Not exactly the perfect Christmas gift for grandma, but you know, it's a thought that counts, right? Still, you should definitely consider it. It'll save you a ton of dough, or your loved ones a ton of dough. At that point, when it kicks in, you won't care about much. Anyway, if you get a plan well ahead of time, then you'll have an opportunity to negotiate. But you can forget about that when the deed is done. Question is, while down here in Latin America, who do you call first when someone croaks? In many cases, and I've got it set up this way myself, That'd be your trusted Latin American lawyer and his staff. They'll know what to do and the steps necessary to get the embassy on board, too, because they will have to be contacted. The good thing about getting your lawyer involved right away is that he'll have done this kind of thing before. He won't be reinventing the wheel. And do leave a copy of your will with your Latin lawyer. It has to be easily locatable. Oh, and do let your family up in the States know who your contacts are down here in Latin America. They'll want to know all the details right away, so they should be able to contact your lawyer instantly. That'll help take some of the burden off of them during those sad and stressful moments. Or maybe happy moments if you were a jerk and died with lots of dough. Now, the points that you should put in your will, if you want the easiest option of all, that is get cremated, for example. By the way, you could have a complete cremation service done here in Latin America for around $2,000 or less. Though I'd say only about 1 in 100 or even 200 people ever goes that route. It's a very Christian culture. And I don't know if you're aware of this, but Christians believe, at least most Catholic, that at a certain point after the second coming comes that moment called the rapture. You've seen the movie. No, not the zombie apocalypse movies. Though they've got a few things in common. I'm talking about those rapture movies. There's hundreds of them out there. You know the drill. Everyone's raised from the grave and they get sucked up into heaven. Man, I'll tell you, you don't want to be sleeping off a hangover in the cemetery that night. Anyway, if you're cremated, you won't have a grave, so when the rapture comes, you're SOL. But I digress, as usual. What were we talking about? Oh yeah, cremation. Yeah, I remember a few years back, it was hard to find a funeral that would do a cremation, but now they're fairly common. And Latinos don't look at you quite so oddly when you mention cremation. Before, back in the 80s and 90s anyway, it was equivalent to blasphemy. But I'll tell you, after the year 2000 and legalized gay marriage kicked in most Latin countries, Catholics and Christians have loosened up. But back to death, dying, and wills regarding gringos and expats. Now, what if you have cryptocurrencies? What to do? What to do? You know, when you've got a crypto wallet, you've got your 12 or 24 keywords. I say, write them down, then flip two of them around, let's say number 16 and 24, and only you know that. Then you give those keys to someone you trust, might be your brother or dad or mother in the States. But still, it's totally useless to them because they don't know which two words have been flipped. That's where your Latino lawyer comes in. You write down in your will who you want your keys to go to, the person that's supposed to get your crypto stash, and you give your lawyer an envelope with those two flipped numbers in it, with instructions as to who they go to. The will stipulating when you die, he opens that envelope. Now remember, he doesn't have your keys, and the person you gave the keys to doesn't know the two positions of the flipped words. Personally, I think that's a hell of a lot better idea than others I've heard. Like, for example, you write half of your keywords down on one page, the other half on another, and give them to two different friends or relatives. Then the only way they get what's in your wallet is to meet and match up those two sheets. Sounds like that could be problematic. I'm sure if you think about it a bit, you'll figure out why. Though you could split the keywords three ways or four ways, but that gets rather complicated. By the way, on the subject of crypto and Bitcoin, now, of course, you've noticed there's no shortage of bad press on cryptos. Same thing with anything that has to do with Bitcoin and crypto in El Salvador. So then which news sources, if any, should you believe? I mean, we all know about the five big corporations that control 90 to 95% of the lame street media, right? I just ran across a confession by former Bloomberg financial journalist Joe Nakamoto. He says, and this just came out a few days ago, he says, I'm a former Bloomberg journalist, and one of the main rules for being able to write about cryptos and Bitcoin is that we can't own any Bitcoin or crypto ourselves, so we're not biased. The problem is, he says, not owning some of the best performing assets in history like Bitcoin can also affect your bias when you're writing about stuff like that. For example, imagine knowing about but not owning something that's gone up 1,000% in just a couple of years and not being able to get in because if you did, it would affect your career because if you had some, they wouldn't let you write about it. He says, staying on the sidelines has hit me hard. I wish I'd bought some rather than simply researching Bitcoin earlier and writing about it. Then I probably wouldn't have written such awful negative hit pieces on it as a result. I'm sorry, he says. All right, me Johnny here again. Think about it. If he feels that way and admits it, imagine all the other financial analysts and journalists who've also done hit pieces on crypto and Bitcoin, showing their negative bias, being slightly resentful because they know other people were making fortunes on the stuff and they couldn't. Wow, that's something to think about, huh? But I digress. Where were we? Oh, yeah. We were talking about wills and when gringos croak.
Then there's the question of cemetery types and tombstones. Now, if you choose a regular burial and not a cremation, and you don't want your body shipped back to the States, which I don't recommend because it's a very costly process. In any event, it's slightly more complex. In fact, I know of a case of someone who just died here recently. He was a European national and wanted to get shipped back to his family in Spain. Cost him $10,000 to prepare the body here in Central America, get all the paperwork and sanitary and health permissions to ship the body and so forth, plus to buy the proper coffin to be used in transit. Just know it's very costly to ship a body back to the States or Europe or wherever. So if you're not cremating, you should consider burying them in a local cemetery. And there are public and private cemeteries too. And the public cemeteries, just like public schools, are absolute disasters. Scruffy, tombstones leaning and heaving, limited, almost zero maintenance and gardening, people and even street people wandering through at all hours. But then again, when you're dead, you're dead. And the plots there are extremely cheap. And as far as we're concerned, nearly free. Now, of course, there are many very beautiful, lush, plush, exquisitely manicured private cemeteries, too. And they're really ridiculously inexpensive compared to similar plots up in the States. I'd say they're about a third to a fifth the cost of similar plots back home. Now, as far as funeral homes in Latin America, there are really three different types. The very high end, the medium, and the very low end. In fact, I've seen just recently complete prepaid funeral packages advertised for as low as $500. And I'm talking complete. That won't get you the plot in the cemetery, but it'll get you the complete funeral service, including the hearse and the procession to the cemetery. By the way, unlike in the States, here in Latin America, you can always tell how cheap or expensive a funeral service is by the type of hearse and funeral caravan you see driving down the road on the way to the cemetery. Now, I know most all funeral homes up in the States have nice late model hearses, spick and span, in perfect condition. Well, you'll see that in high-end funeral homes down here too, but in the medium and low-end funeral homes, you'll often see really old-school hearses and the accompanying funeral fleet, slightly, even more than slightly, faded, scratched, and dented, with lots of those vehicles dating back from the 70s, 60s, even 50s. Nothing wrong with that, but they just can't seem to keep them pristine, especially in the smaller towns out in the boonies. I've on occasion seen a procession out of the corner of my eye and thought I caught a glimpse of the Munstermobile with Grandpa Munster driving. So if you're into restoring old vintage cars, man, there's a gold mine down here. Oops, I just noticed the time. We're getting to the end of the show now, so I'll continue with this next week. Stay tuned.
South of the border. You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.